Hello, everybody. Cal here. What's happening?
Hi, Cal. Welcome. We were just getting worried. We thought perhaps you were having problems getting through.
You said to come in at 10 after.
10 after? Oh, you mean, sorry, you say it differently to us. Yeah, that's absolutely fine. I think maybe our watches aren't synchronized, but don't worry about it.
Yeah, I thought I was supposed to give you guys 10 minutes to get your stuff together before we start the call.
That's it, and that's what we've done, and we've done very well. Thank you.
All right, I'm sure you have. So who's there?
Okay, well, we have got with us tonight, we've got Robert Shapiro, Andrew Bendefi, Linda Planter, isn't it Linda?
Panter.
Panter, sorry, got that wrong. Barry Neal, Piers Dade, Christine Nealand, Janice Manson is calling all the way from BC, Helen Ryle, isn't it Helen?
That's right, yeah.
Ireland, and I think Tricia Wilfrey may be there if she's come back in, I'm not quite sure. Maybe she is or maybe she isn't. And then, of course, there's myself. Did I miss anybody out there? I think not. Okay, so we have a very good now.
Have joined the conference.
All right.
Have joined the conference.
More are joining the conference as we speak, it sounds like.
That's good. That's excellent. All right. Okay, so, Cal, I have a very long list of questions, as you know. You suggested that I, you know, go through them and say tell you some of the questions. I'm just going to turn my speaker on right now. I just want to record this starting from now. Okay, I didn't want to record any dross. So here we go. All right. So, Cal, it's hard because we all have questions that we would obviously like to ask. But because we have limited time, I'm going to kind of edit down a bit and go for the ones which seem to be of interest to people. Piers wants to ask about alcoholism. He's very interested, though, because he seems to be getting more and more people coming along with alcohol. He would like
Are you still there? You sounded like I lost you, or you got chopped off.
We had a line problem earlier. Can you hear me now okay?
I sure can. You just mentioned that there was a question about alcoholism.
That's right. Piers Dade would like to ask about the best way of dealing with clients who present with alcohol problems, because he seems to be getting an increasing number of them.
Okay, do five pack.
Evening, Cal. Now, I'm using pure 5-path the whole way through, but what I often get is it takes till session 3 to actually get them come on board more because they seem very distant to start with.
Then tell them to go away.
Okay.
I'm serious. If someone is not fully engaged in the process, then tell them to go find someone else to go see. I find far too many 5-pathers are trying to do the work for the individual. I'll tell somebody, look, you're either in this 100%, or you're out the door. It has a whole lot more effect on you whether or not you fully engage in this process than me. And I'd give them the talk. I'd say, look, if not now, then when? If not this, then what? I want you to think about everything that you've tried to deal with this problem effectively. Now I want you to think of how well that's worked for you. I want you to think about what you're going to do if you don't engage fully into this process. And now decide, you're in or you're out. I can't do this.
Went Santa Barbara. It's a training in Santa Barbara. We're not going to go to that. It's on a Sunday.
Did you catch that?
Yes, I did. There's someone talking over the top of you for some reason.
Well, that sounds like we're getting a bleed from another line, but we should just keep on going.
Right.
That's it. I mean, this is hardcore hypnosis. This isn't made stuff.
I'm having a good rapport and I'm getting people cured. It just takes a hell of a lot longer than anything else.
Okay. And I'm going to avoid the word cure.
Okay. Sorry. I'm getting people off alcohol.
Yeah,
and empowering them and getting lead in their lives.
Yeah.
But for some reason, it's taking 10, 12 sessions rather than sort of 6 to 8.
Okay. How many sessions does it take to do 5-pack?
Normally about 6.
Not normally. On average.
On average.
See, because if you use the word normally, then going 10 or 12 sessions is not normal.
Okay, so on average, I would say 5 or 6 sessions, and I've got the people out there, you know, doing their month off.
Right. And so, but we've got to be careful about the words we use.
Mm-hmm.
Use words like normal, then we, and they don't do it in the quote normal period of time, and that implies that they are not normal, or they have an abnormal problem, or their situation is abnormal. And when that's not the case, what we're dealing with is someone that, you know, given that the skill of the therapist or the hypnotist is the same and all that kind of stuff, just has a more complicated issue, or they're not as talented in engaging in the process or whatever. But, you know, please do not feel forced to try to get everybody to do the average. In fact, average, by definition, means some are going to take less, some are going to take more.
Yeah. Okay, so I will continue doing what I'm doing. You haven't got any of those old Cal's cunning little plans on the side that work especially well for alcoholics?
Alcoholics is the same as everything. In my view, there's no difference between someone drinking too much alcohol and someone eating too much food or someone biting their nails too much. What they're doing is they are distracting themselves with the use of alcohol.
Yeah.
And what happens is a lot of people who've used alcohol over a number of years of it always try to get other people to do stuff for them, and or they're really good at making excuses. And you just got to be probably diametrically opposed in that on one hand you have to be very firm for them when they need you to be firm, and you need to be also very non-judgmental and joining with them in helping them when they need that. So it's really being with them, but sometimes you have to cut them loose and say, hey, look, when you're ready to do this, you come back. I believe I can help you, but you know, you're dragging your heels here or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've taken people at our center from people who are abusing alcohol to not just getting off the alcohol, but becoming someone like everyone else who could use alcohol like the normal everyday person.
Yep, that's what I've been doing. I've been having a huge amount of success with people. And for some reason, it is taking me longer to convert to dissolve everything away.
And also, you got to remember that alcoholism or abuse of alcohol or whatever you want to call it is more likely to have secondary gain than a lot of issues that we work with.
Yeah. Okay, so you confirm what I thought. I didn't think I was doing anything wrong, and I think he was confirmed to me my thoughts. I don't think I am. But it's just a slower process.
Yeah. Sometimes it's just the same as everybody else, but it does tend to be something that is more likely to go into phase 5, and so that will tend to add 1 or 2 sessions.
Yeah.
Also, since... all of these too much behaviors, eating too much, drinking too much, smoking too much, once a person has gotten older, they've found out that they're able to manage a number of emotions through distraction. And so you may have to neutralize a number of emotions from the past before the drive to distract has been fully neutralized.
Yep.
So fear, anger, guilt, you know, sadness, all of that.
Perfect. Thank you.
You're welcome. Glad to help out. Next.
Okay, Cal, both Barry and Christine were interested to know how Five Path can be used and with cancer patients, and if you in particular have had success with cancer patients.
Who's talking now?
This is Nikki. Sorry, Cal, I should have said it.
Well, Five Path is, you know, I've talked about it in most classes, the diathesis stress hypothesis, and that is how psychologists look at how the stress contributes, and most medical people look at how stress contributes to chronic illness. And whenever we go in and remove the stress, hypnosis, be it five path or direct suggestion, doesn't heal anything. What it does, particularly five path and seven path, is we can go in and neutralize the stress. When we neutralize the stress, then the body is able to use all of its energy to go after the illness. And so what we do is we just go in with five path and we neutralize the stress. I have not personally had anyone who's come to me for cancer stay through the treatment. We've worked with it and we've gotten reduction in tumor size as reported by the medical examination, but then they've quit the process. So some people just would rather die of cancer than go through.
Have joined the conference.
But it makes perfect sense to me. I believe that everyone that is working with any doctor or any clinic or any hospital that works with chronic illness of any kind should have a five-pather on hand working with reducing these emotional stressors so that the work they're doing medically through nutrition, through chemotherapy, through any kind of medication will work better. Because they'll have that energy back for healing instead of generating and pushing down, clamping down on the emotion.
Okay, this is Nikki. Barry or Christine, since you were the two who were particularly interested in the subject, do either of you want to talk to more to Cal about this?
Yeah, this is Christine.
Hello, Christine.
Hi, Cal. That was thanks for your answer there. I suppose I'm quite interested in, the idea that Stephen Parkhill puts forward. I wonder if you had any opinion of it, that in his experience, he believes that cancer can be caused because a child often in the womb has not been wanted, and that there probably was an attempt to abort the child. Could you say that you've had any personal experience of that with people you've worked with?
I disagree with Steve Parkhill on that, and that what he's doing is just doing the best he can to figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
But from a more research, scientific point of view, we don't have to say, you see, the problem with saying people get cancer because of this emotional issue, the problem is once you believe that, then you're going to try to make all of your clients go in and have that experience.
Yeah.
And we don't have to do that as five pathers. We bring up the feeling that has everything to do with the problem and we follow it back to wherever it takes us. We do the tests that we need to do for an ISC. We neutralize it. We go through the SSCs, continue to neutralize and reinforce the change. And then we can do some age progression when it's appropriate. But this kind of thing is saying, I know Parkhill will say things like breast cancer is caused by not feeling like you're nurturing your children right or this kind of thing. And let's say that was true. Guess what? Being a good five-pather, we don't have to let's say that liver cancer was caused by one kind of situation and lung cancer was caused by another kind of emotional situation and so on. You'd have to memorize all that stuff. Five pathers don't have to do that. We just bring the feeling up, and then we follow it back. Now, I don't buy into all that stuff myself, and I believe in the diet, the stress hypothesis, and that is that any significant powerful emotion from the past that's not been released, that's unresolved, stresses the body and can cause it lowers the immune system and can allow all these kinds of chronic illnesses to manifest. So he could be right, but if we do it our way, we still get the same results, you see.
Yeah, that's really helpful, Cal. Can I ask one more question on that?
Sure.
Specifically? That makes perfect sense. So I suppose the next question I've got would be, given that cancer is something that people generally fight with all sorts with, medication and, with this type of hypnosis, with their diet, When would you say with five paths you felt that they were, they'd come to the end of their treatment?
I'm not sure what you mean.
Well, you know, if somebody had, let's say, you know, cancer of the liver, and they had five, six, seven sessions of five paths, and it, they, every session seemed to be fruitful and was moving in the right direction, short of having another scan on their liver, which, you know, often people aren't able to do at the drop of a hat. When would you say that they'd completed their course of five paths sufficiently? Would you wait until they'd had another scan, or would you, how would you measure it?
Well, okay, one of the things I would always do with anyone that's working with chronic illness, I'd always be teaching them the seventh path, too.
Yeah.
They can continue to do the process at home. Then also, it's really on a case-by-case basis. And if I have someone that I can work with indefinitely, I mean, they just have the resources and I have the time, and, you know, and it comes together where I can work with them every month, every week or something like that, until they've been declared cancer-free by their doctor, I might do that.
Yeah.
But I would never say, oh, that's all you get, you know. Now, as long as I believe, and the more I know about the client, we learn a lot about the client in the age regression process. And if there's something that looks like could be worked on, heck, go ahead and work on it. Because, you see, this is the good thing. Almost all medicines are poison, and they have side effects. And according to the medical model, you should always do the least invasive process first, given that there's time to do it. And so with 5-PATH and 7-PATH, there are no negative side effects other than maybe being kind of tired or cranky afterwards. So I would play, you know, most of what needs to be done is revealed in the age regression. And if I find there's a number of different emotions that are unresolved from the past, I would keep working on those, and I would do the forgiveness work associated with that, too, until either we have not had success and the client has passed away, or until they've been proven free, or until the client is unable to undergo 5-PATH anymore and 7-PATH, or until they're unwilling to go through 5-PATH and 7-PATH for any reason.
Yeah, that's really useful. Thank you.
You're welcome. This is so fun talking to you guys. Michael? Yes?
It's Barry Neal here.
Barry.
Hi there. Just on a follow-up on that, one of my other points on working with cancer patients is, how do you actually bring up the topic of hypnosis and cancer with a patient? I mean, obviously, the last thing you want to do is be making promises you can't keep. So how would you bring it up in the to the client that, you know, you could possibly help them in some way?
I talk about the diathesis stress hypothesis, and I say this is the way doctors and psychologists look at chronic illness, and that is that there is almost always a stress component. And old anger, old, you know, emotions unresolved from the past can have an effect. And what we can do is we can go in and start neutralizing that stuff, and you get back that energy for your body to do its healing.
Right.
And I said, you know, the doctors don't make any promises either. Lawyers don't make any promises. Teachers don't make any promises. And, you know, you can say that, does that make sense to you? And, gosh, my treatment's not going to make your hair fall out.
Mm.
And I would never say do this instead of normal accepted medical practice, you know, medical treatment, but I would do it concomitantly. I prefer the word complementary to alternative.
Right. Okay. And I know Stephen Parkhill's got one view on this, and Jerry Kine's got another view, is that once you've done the regression, the forgiveness work and things like that, would you then use any type of visualization, much like the sort of Simontons did?
No, visualization is impotent compared to what we have. Take the person into somnambulism and then do age progression.
Right.
And have them pre-vivify doing things in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Of going to the doctor and being announced, you know, free of the illness, a year later on their sailboat, you know, 2 years later at their daughter's wedding, that kind of stuff.
Right.
But you know what? Visualization, if the client will do it, like, you know, Kine likes to have, like, them visualize sharks and things like that going after the cancer and stuff like that, that can't hurt. But the problem is that which we focus on tends to expand, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if we focus on the cancer, it empowers the cancer.
Yeah.
But you're focused on making it smaller, removing it. So that would make sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
But my style is more, what I would recommend with what I know and with my experience is that they do 7 paths,
mm-hmm.
and in the 5th recognition in the full form, they would use that recognition to have the fantasy of receiving it, and if you guys have had 7 paths, you know I'm talking about this, the fantasy of doing it, and that would be healing, and the fantasy of receiving it, and that'd be all the benefit of healing.
Okay. Great.
Hey, this is Nikki again.
Hey, Nikki.
Hey, I'm back. Right, Ellen, 7th. Is everybody here certified in 7th class? For anybody who isn't certified?
Well, we could talk about 7th path, we just won't use the actual wording of the recognition.
Okay, so Helen, if you can bear that in mind, would you like to ask your questions of Cal? Helen, he's still there.
Oh, we lost Helen?
I think we lost Helen. Okay, let's move on. Janice Manson, you've got questions about clients going back into past lives, doing age regression, and then jumping forward from leaving the past life and jumping forward and suddenly saying that they're in the body of the client. Would you like to tell Carl more about that?
Yes, sure. Can you hear me all right?
Who's this?
This is Janice Manson.
Hi, Janice. So nice to talk to you.
I know we're on the same continent, but we're going through the UK to talk.
Well, it's a small, small world after all.
Yes. So I had a question. I've been seeing clients and, of course, have had lots of great experiences so far. Have had a few of them, though, who are popping through AR back into past life, or what they perceive to be a past life.
Yes.
Sure.
Have left the conference.
And I'm in one particular case, it was a gentleman who popped into a past life asking, you know, what's happening, what are you thinking, what are you feeling, how old are you, so on and so forth, and finding out that they're in some ancient time, in a circle, waiting for their death to occur, that they're content and happy about this. We progress and continue on and go to the time of their death. They progress to the death, and I keep asking what's happening as they're looking down at their body. And then reviewing what's going on and ask them to look up, expecting them to have their ascension experience. And suddenly the client, you know, arches off the couch and makes this intake of breath, and I go, what's happening? And he says, he's in me. And I said, who's in you? And, you know, he names the spirit that's in him from the previous life. And so I'm sort of confused about where to go at this point in time. I did try and ascertain if this spirit's supposed to be there, what it felt like, whether it was malevolent or whether it was, you know, but this client said this was wonderful, it was peaceful. level, it was where he was supposed to be, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, so that in, it looks like, or it feels like, rather than going through that ascension of experience, this spirit just went straight into grown-up.
Okay, let me make a couple of comments, and I'm going to ask you to reframe your question, okay?
Okay.
First of all, it's an error to do something that, okay, the person has died, and then say, look up, because you expect them to have an ascension experience. The person may not have had an ascension experience. After the person has died, we just say, what's happening, go on, now it's happening, move to the next significant event. We want to reveal what happened after death without leading them at all.
Okay,
and,
yeah.
And when that happens, then you find out if they have ascension experience. We don't want to suggest that they have an ascension experience. We want to see if it just happened. Do you have my Spirit Releasement Therapy CD set?
Yes, yes. And I've been, I went through it, and I've been going through it.
Okay, because that's going to help you out a lot. Also, in the Balsam CDs, there's some stuff on there about this, too.
Okay. Yeah, and I've got the early ones.
Okay, and so that, that will be helpful. That what you want to do is, first of all, I don't really, haven't ever really found the need to do much work in the past life. I just move them to the end of the life, find out what happens. Because I'm not going to start doing past life therapy on someone when I don't even know if that's, if it's real, or if it is real, if it is their past life.
Yeah,
so
I understand
what
that.
I have to do is I just kill them off and see what happens. Boom, 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 boom. And I do a lot of, and I'm going to be putting together this, okay, here's a sneak peek to everybody. I'm going to be putting together doing a informing soul technique video where you guys are going to see one of my secret weapons. I don't talk about it very much, but I do it probably in about half of my sessions. And what I do is a special version of what we're about to talk about, except I don't lead someone into a past life. I just take them before they come into this life, and I take them to where they're just the soul, and we find out why they're coming into this life and that kind of stuff. And boy, there's some things we can find out that makes the age regression informed child work so much easier and the forgiveness work so much easier. Okay, so now you've got... So now, with that kind of background, can you just ask me what your question is again?
So my question is, you know, what should I have done differently once this client reported that this spirit, which he identified as himself coming into this current life, was in his current grown-up client body?
Yeah, I would one thing I would tell you something. Keep that thought. I'd regress him to when that happened.
Okay.
I want to find out when that happened. Because if that happened after their birth and it's somebody else's spirit, then we've got a spirit attachment, and then I would immediately move into the process that's on those CDs about how to do a spirit releasement.
Yeah.
Go on.
Okay, so that was the, I mean, that was basically it, was I had done some additional questions about, were you meant to be found?
Okay,
asking the client also what, I also tried to ask the client what he felt when that happened, like what's he feeling about the presence inside him?
Okay.
And it was positive.
Okay, let me tell you some things.
Okay.
First of all, you don't do... Were you meant to be found unless you suspect you have a dark force entity? All attachments are not dark force entities.
Yes, I understand that. And because of the situation, I was worrying that this might be a dark force entity.
Okay, from what I understood, this thing, this spirit, had an existence as a human being, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, dark force entities were never human beings.
Yes.
And so from what I know so far, where this person died and then that spirit goes into my client, I have no reason to believe from what I've heard so far that I have a dark force entity. And we only ask dark force entities, how do you like being found?
Mm-hmm.
Were you supposed to be found? That kind of stuff.
Okay, that's clear. That's good.
Yeah, and go to those CDs again, because that's something I make a point out there. And I know there's so much information on those CDs. You need to listen to them. Like, for me to really get something like that, I will usually listen to a CD like 5 times.
Yes, I'm on time number 3 already.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that will help out a lot, because you really need to know what you're doing when you're doing this kind of stuff, because if you don't do it right, it just won't work, and it'll get frustrating, and it can freak out your clients.
Yeah. That's understood. And gratefully, this client wasn't freaked out in any way, shape, or form, was just ecstatic with the whole experience.
Beautiful.
He
thought it was wonderful. So I'm hoping all's well that ends well in that particular circumstance.
Now, if he was not a dark force entity and it was a, you know, some other attachment, just because they think it's a positive thing doesn't mean it is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they might have some fondness for it, or there might be some positive intent there. But if just because the individual feels good about this individual that's attached, and the attached feels good about it, doesn't mean it's good.
Mm-hmm.
If you have an earthbound spirit, I'm going to tell you kind of an insider tip, trick, and technique here, is if you have someone who doesn't ascend, in my experience, the main reason they don't ascend is because inside a non-ascended spirit is a dark force entity.
Mm-hmm.
And if your client is not aware of that, and then it can be welcome to this attachment that has this malevolent energy into it.
So a nested thing.
Yeah.
Another question. If we sort of rewind and backtrack to the situation where, you know, this is slammed into the client's body, what's the right next correct thing to do?
Well, I would, if I don't
know. Versus what I did.
Well, I would regress them to when that happened, when that other entity first joined them.
Okay.
And I would do a spirit releasement. Mm-hmm. I want to establish that entity is a separate entity, and that it did join them at a specific time. It had its own needs, wants, and desires, which are separate from my client's purpose in this life, and that they need to be released so that they can have their ascension experience and then come back into their own body and have an appropriate life experience.
And if it's not a dark force entity or an ignorant spirit, but is indeed that client,
Well, then what will happen is there will have been an ascension experience. There will have been an experience that occurs before coming into the body. And someone is making some crackling noise in the background.
Yeah, I hear that.
Yeah. There it goes again. So if you're making a crackling noise, please stop. Or if I do a teleconference, you can star 6 yourself out for your privacy. I don't know how you do it on this one. Anyway, if it is indeed that individual's spirit, then they will have passed on in the past life, they will have ascended, and then they will have gone through a preparation process to come back into this life, and that spirit would have joined the infant. Your soul doesn't join you when you're 7 or 8, and that's why it's important to regress them back to the time when they joined into the body.
So when you're dealing with a spirit that then ascends, but then you can go through this informed spirit approach, because you do talk about that in some of the material I already have.
Right. Well, the informing soul technique is what I'm calling
that's right.
It.
Yes. And that happens before the baby, before little one.
Before the soul of the individual enters into the body that it's going to have for that life.
Yes. Okay.
Mm-hmm. We find out what's its purpose of coming into this life, and if there's any reason for this person to have these parents, and what the good is, and that kind of stuff.
And then you join the soul or spirit with the grown-up, into the center of grown-up. after that process, correct?
Oh, it's even better than that. What's going to happen is after we've joined the soul with the body, what we're going to do is we're going to have the baby born. And then we're going to have the soul that knows all this stuff inform the baby after it's born so that
it informs. So it informs before it's born and then after it's born.
Well, what happens is we've got to make sure that the soul is informed, that it understands why it's coming in.
Okay.
And if it doesn't, then we're going to have it dialogue with some positive energies on the other side. It might be angels, spirits, God, Jesus, whatever, however it comes out, to make sure it understands why it's coming into this life and the purpose of the life. Then we join it with the baby as it's supposed to be, usually in utero, you know, before born. And then after it's born, we have the soul. We're going to tear the veil of forgetting, and we're going to have the soul inform the baby why it came into this life. Wouldn't you like to know why you came into this life, why you have this parent, what your main calling in this life is, and challenges, and, you know, that kind of stuff?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, and that's what we do for our clients. And we're going to find out if they chose those parents, and if so, why, and this kind of thing. And it just becomes a wonderful process. I'm going to do a couple videos with some of our interns here, use them as demos, and it's really going to, I think it's really going to be great. I'm going to do some informing soul technique video program, and then I'm also going to do a past life regression program.
Sounds good.
Those should come out in the next few months.
Okay, that's my lot there.
All right, glad to help out. Who's next?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
This is Nikki. Can I just ask a question from what you just said?
Sure.
Did you say that the soul informs after the baby is born?
Yes, that is where the veil of forgetting is torn. Because the problem is if you inform if the soul does the informing before you're born, it seems like once we're born, we forget, right? And so we want to have the soul. First, we make sure the soul is informed, that it knows why it's coming in, what the good is, what their calling is in life, why they have those parents and any other significant people in their life. Then we will join the soul to the baby in utero before they're born, have them born, and then, just like we would say, be grown up, right? Well, we say, okay, now I'm talking to the soul. Tell the little one what he or she needs to hear so that she understands why she's coming into this life. And that changes everything. It's my secret weapon. It's the magical bullet.
Okay, then I haven't been getting that right, because I've been getting the soul. I mean, I've done quite a lot of this work because I seem to have a lot of clients who go back into past lives, and I always get I've been getting the soul to inform the little one in utero. And then, as soon as the little one is born, then I've been bringing in grown-ups to do it from the other end, as it were.
Well, as long as, I mean, you can do that, but you have to suggest to them, when you're born, you're going to remember this. Okay, you got to do something to connect that knowledge so that it is with the child after being born. And the way I do it is just doing the informing after they're born. But if you can do it before they're born, but then you got to make sure, you got to suggest to them and probably even test it, you know, that they carry that information into this life.
Okay, thank you. That's very helpful, very helpful. And I'm looking forward to seeing those videos. That should be great.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to doing them. Who's next?
Well, I'm going to ask a question for myself, if that's okay. It's still Nikki, because I've been asking them on behalf of other people.
Okay.
So if it's okay with you, and it's one that I put in my email to you, I'm concerned that I might be overdoing my AR. I know that, I don't think Piers is still with us, but interestingly, he said in one of his questions that he worries he might not be doing enough, and I'm worried I might be doing too much. I seem to quite regularly do quite a few sessions of AR with clients. Now, I know that's not always a bad thing, but I'm a bit concerned that maybe I'm doing too much. Maybe I'm being too, careful. Maybe I'm doing more kind of mopping up than I need to. Now, I said in my question to you that I seem to get clients with who report a lot of emotions around the same event. And I think this may be the problem, because I get clients who, you know, will say, I feel lonely, I feel sad, or I feel sad, I feel scared, I feel lonely, all in the same event. And it's a little bit confusing as to know which emotion I should be following back.
Okay, one of the things is, let's use a razor here, because some situations are going to fall on one side, some are going to fall on the other. If they came in for a too much behavior, eating too much, drinking too much, smoking too much, all that kind of stuff, then what we need to do is we need to neutralize enough emotion from the past so that it'll stop driving the behavior. If they came in for like an anxiety or fear, that's different. Then we know it's fear that we want to work on, and we just need to neutralize that. Okay? So those are the two things. One on one hand is the too much behaviors. If they're drinking too much, they could be drinking too much because of from guilt from the past, anxiety from the past, anger from the past, you know, or eating too much because of fear, guilt, and anxiety from the past. So we need to neutralize all those. How much? Not 100%, but enough. And so the proof is in the pudding, as they say, and that is, you know, are they starting to change? And then the other thing is, make sure you're doing the Fab Five. And that is, I was looking at some notes from the questions that would be sent to me, and I would hear that the person reports such and such feeling as you're doing the age regression. Remember that our clients are notoriously bad at reporting what they're feeling. And so you want to focus more on what they're thinking than what they're feeling. So we want to get what's happening, we want to get their age, we want to get what they're thinking, their feeling, and familiar or new. What they're thinking is more reliable than what they're feeling in the event. Now, as far as regression, affect bridge is more reliable than cognitive bridge as far as taking us back to events, because emotion is more substantial than just thoughts. Thoughts are fleeting. But once we get them into the actual event, we'll find out what's happening, what do they think about it, and what do they feel about it. But a lot of times they'll say, oh, I'm going to get a spanking or something. And they'll say, well, how does that make you feel? Sad. Well, sad is incongruent with what they're thinking. What they're thinking is that something bad is going to happen, and so what they're feeling that's relevant to the situation is fear, not sadness. And if we are working with anxiety, obviously the fear is more important than the sadness. But if they're doing a too much behavior, we may have to neutralize both, but I would do the more relevant emotion, and that is the one that is that is consistent with what they're thinking. That's why all five pathers really have to get this secret language of feelings down. And in the Bolsum CDs, I really talk about that secret language of feelings and how it relates to doing this work. And I think that's the one thing that our interns here on site get more than the people that don't, is when you're doing the regression, well, they might say that they're sad one time, you go back farther, and they say I'm depressed, you go back farther, they're frustrated, you go back farther, they're fearful. Well, what emotions do you regress on? What's your important? And it depends on whether they're an anxiety fears client or if they're a too much behaviors client. If they're an anxiety fears client, then we mainly want to focus on the fear. If there are too much behavior, we want to go after those emotions that are the strongest and most relevant to the situation. And we determine that by what they're thinking. Does that help?
Yes, it does in one sense. And I you've simplified it in one way. Certainly the too much and the too much behaviors, that makes a lot of sense to me, and I understand that. And also, yes, you've simplified it by saying follow the feeling that is relevant to what they came in for. That's good. But what happens when, for example, I mean, looking at my example that I emailed to you, you've got a client who's, say, 3 months old, and you say, what are you thinking? I'm all alone. I'm deserted. I feel like I've been deserted. And how does that make you feel? I feel very lonely. I feel very sad. As the previous one, this is a woman who came in for fear, for anxiety, actually a woman who had a detached retina, which kept detaching. And ultimately they said, you know, we don't know what the problem is. We think it must be emotional. And so she came in with huge amounts of anxiety and fear. So we'd been following scared back, but suddenly we got to lonely and sad. And, you know, in that situation, which would I follow, lonely or sad?
Neither one. Neither one.
Oh, neither.
Yeah, none of the above. What we would do is lonely. Okay, well, let's look at the context of a child who's 3 months old who believes that she is alone. Okay? What emotion would that bring up?
I guess sad. Sadness.
There's a difference between grown-up being lonely and child being lonely. Okay, a child who's 3 months old is completely and absolutely 100% dependent upon parents. And if the parents aren't there when the child wants them to be there, that is a very frightening experience. And so what we do is we say, if they say, I'm sad, I say, why are you sad? Mother's not here. Well, if mother's not there, what might happen? You see? And they say, well, I'll be alone. And then what might happen? Well, I'll be alone. Well, okay, well, if you're alone and mom doesn't come, what's wrong with that? And they'll say, well, I might not get fed, or I might not get changed, or I might get hurt. Oh, okay. You see, so now they're explaining something bad might happen. And so what we're discovering there is it is fear.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I do that, what might happen, because I remember you talking to us about that before, and I follow that back a lot, because one thing that stuck with me from last time we had some time with you was following back, and very often, particularly the younger the child, it may lead to, I might die, and
exactly.
I think that's very important.
Mm-hmm. And that's the easiest one to fix, because we can prove that they didn't die.
Yes. Now, that's been helpful. That's been very helpful, Cal. Thank you. I think I've overcomplicated the situation.
Well, there's a tendency to believe our clients. And just like we don't believe our clients when they're grown-ups and they tell us about the cause of the problem, we don't always want to believe that they're no smarter at 3 months than they are at 30 years old. And so what we need to do is we need to be the logic machine here and say, okay, what's happening? What are you thinking? And what they're thinking needs to make sense given what's happening, and then what they report as the emotion has to make sense given what they're thinking. And if it doesn't, we'll do the drilling down technique, as I like to call it, and you say, well, then what might happen, and then what might happen, and then what might happen? And we're going to find that age regression is usually about fear. And as we neutralize those fears, we're going to get the most success for our clients most of the time in age regression.
Excellent. Thank you very much. It's been very helpful.
Thank you. I could probably get one more question in.
Okay. Who's there? Who'd like to ask a question? Let's throw it open.
This is Christine. I'd like to ask a question.
Hi, Christine.
Hi, Carl. Well, what I really want to ask is, when are you definitely coming over to Britain? Because this is just totally fascinating. We obviously need much more of you. Can I ask you? I've had a lot of people going through age regression and going to before the womb and connecting with. I suppose I've been kind of naming it essence because it seems a little bit more neutral than soul, and some people might say, yeah, it feels like essence or soul. And then talking about essence, soul, in the same way that you would do the informed child. And informing the child, there is nowhere the essence ends and you begin. This is who you are. Is that what you mean when you're talking about tearing the veil of forgetting?
Well, the problem is if the soul just joins, or the essence, or higher self, whatever you want to call it, the normal process, it appears from what we observe in these regressions, is that the soul comes into this life with a purpose, some aware, even if it's just the vaguest awareness. But then once they're born, they forget. And so if we can bring that awareness to the child, and then it changes everything.
Yes, and so that's that's what I've been doing, bringing, as the child grows up, bringing, you know, essence growing up with the child, and then once the client is emerged, you know, often they'll talk again about essence and how amazing it was to connect with the higher self or their soul or their essence, and we would have a discussion about the soul, the inner child, and the adult after emerging. Is that congruent with what you're doing?
Let's see, you can have that discussion. I like to make sure that the connection, you know, and maybe you're doing this, I just want to make sure that this is concrete with everyone, that we make that connection, that we do that, transferring that knowledge from the soul to the child, and that that knowledge stays with our client so that they know that. And you can discuss it afterwards, but I wouldn't rely on discussing it afterwards to be as effective as moving that information from the soul into the client in the hypnotic state.
Yes.
They're just more open to receiving the information, or in other terms, suggestible, in the hypnotic state.
Yeah. I think I've understood. I had a client this week, or last week actually, who before she regressed, she was a two-year-old being scared by the curtains in her bedroom. And so before that, she went into essence, her soul, and there was a connection with her soul, and then coming back, part of what she noticed as the child integrated and grew up inside of adult was that to be connected with her soul, none of that mattered. That she wasn't, you know, concerned with her environment, so to speak, because she was much more concerned being back in her body, just delighted by what it felt like to be alive on this beautiful day, and it was the sun streaming through the window, and you know, and then she sort of, and we kind of dealt with whatever, you know, with the her fear of her parents, which just wasn't there anymore. But it all seemed to be knowing what she knew now, knowing that she was full of essence, she was full of soul, and that's who she was, ultimately.
Sounds like wonderful work.
Good.
And I would just cap that off with having, doing some informed child with the adult, doing the informing, that the adult can, you know, absolutely for sure say, hey, you're going to live through that. Those curtains did not hurt you. I can vouch for that, and that kind of thing, and having that kind of concrete input also.
Great. Thank you.
All right.
Christine, just very quickly, it's Andrew Bendeffi here. There's a book I bought called The Beautiful Life by a gentleman called Simon Park, and it's called The 10 New Commandments, because life could be better. And in there, it's just, he talks a lot around ego. As essence, as being our inner beauty, and as we grow older, we surround that with personality, and then to cover that, we surround it with ego. And he equates it to like a volcano with the lava in the middle, and then these crusts we put around it. And there's some really nice explanations in there, just from a therapeutic, not from a hypnotherapy perspective, but some of the stories in there I find very useful in explaining to clients. And some of the stories around the essence and what we're trying to get to.
Oh, so. Thanks. Thanks, Andrew.
Okay. All right, everybody. I've got to get ready for a client. But I just want to say that it's been a thrill.
Trisha has left the conference.
And maybe we can do this again in the future. I appreciate Nikki putting this together for everybody. And as far as coming to the UK again, I'd like to do that, and we'll keep in contact about that. And when it's feasible to do that, I would be happy to do it. Look forward to going there once again.
Thank you, Cal.
Yeah, thank you very much, Cal.
You're welcome.
Nikki saying thank you again, Cal, for joining us tonight, and we hope that you'll do so again in a little while, maybe another couple of months.
Okay. And Piers has asked me to say thank you. He had to sign off, but he's very grateful for your help.
All right, everybody. It was fun. We'll do it again.
Thanks, Cal. Bye-bye.
All right. Cal Bagan. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Signing off.
Has left the conference.
Nikki Cassar.
Has left the conference.
Andrew Bendethi.
Has left the conference. Has left the conference.
Jenna.
Has left the conference.
Linda Panter.
Has left the conference.
Christine.
Has left the conference.
Helen Ryle.
Has left the conference.
Robert.
Has left the conference.